Hi, welcome to my latest poor decision. Embark with me, please, on a journey of hope, despair, change, perplexing questions of human nature. Welcome to SpongeBob Pays Taxes.
Who am I? Someone, something would probably be the more accurate descriptor. I exist on Earth. I wish I existed somewhere else. I don't belong here, but I'm here anyway, making the most of it. This is the first episode where I will be analyzing Help Wanted, Season 1, Episode 1A, COVID-19, the American Dream, and the Corporate Machine are topics that are going to be discussed. This is my second time filming the intro because the first time was really bad. So I think past me kicks in at around 33 bars, which is coming up soon. So you're in for something. I don't know. Okay, bye. Enjoy, I guess. So people have told me I could start a podcast. There's a difference between could and should. I could have a manic break and run away to Georgia and change my name and start a whole new life and not tell anyone about it. I could do that based upon my personality profile and what's wrong in the old dog, but should I do that? No. But the thought of a podcast ruminated in my mostly empty psyche, and I brought up the idea to someone in my life that I just wanted to spew my nonsense and hot takes for an hour a week and not tell anyone and have my little Hannah Montana moment. And they initially thought I was talking about a Hannah Montana themed podcast, which upon expanding on that idea would be relating episodes of Hannah Montana to real life. And I thought this was the funniest thing ever. I really enjoyed Hannah Montana growing up, but that's not something I would do. A few days later, I woke up in a cold sweat. Actually, it was a hot sweat. Actually, I just woke up because I was hungry and thought, oh my god, SpongeBob. Now, this isn't the first time I've thought, oh my god, SpongeBob, but it is the first time those words have carried any significant weight. Which, sidebar, I lived such an isolated childhood, literally on an island, far away from my school, and I was extremely sheltered. In sixth grade, and okay, I don't remember much from my childhood, but I do remember this. I was in art class, and everyone was talking about Justin Bieber, and I was like, who's that? Because I was pretty much only allowed to listen to Christian music. So I proceeded to get shamed for that, and honestly, rightfully so. But needless to say, in a lot of religious circles or just strict households, SpongeBob wasn't allowed to be watched. It was really the one piece of pop culture that truly shaped me as a kid. It contributed endlessly to my sense of humor, it made me laugh, and maybe it did kill some brain cells. And so what? I'm alive to tell the tale, somehow still here, alive on this physical plane, running around. I did also meet Tom Kenny when I was like 16 or something, so hopefully I don't get into any copyright things with this podcast, but if I do, maybe he'd vouch for me. So at 6:43 a.m. today, I decided I will be making a podcast in which I will relate each chronological SpongeBob episode to real life. I've never had lice before, luckily. Real life and real life events. But I found out there's already a podcast with a similar premise. I did not listen to it because I didn't want it to infiltrate my brain space. So, full disclosure, I don't know anything about it other than I think there's two male co-hosts. I listened to it for 3 seconds, so I don't really know. I don't know who they are. Does anyone know who they are, though? Lights up, do you know who you are? Harry Styles said it best. Anyway, I'm happy for them. Live your dream right. Do your podcast. I will say it was a hit to my individuality complex as a Leo that hurt my occasional excessive pride. And right now starts a game of how many times will I mention being a Leo throughout the duration of this podcast? Which, it's so Leo of me to mention how I'm going to mention how I'm a Leo on a consistent basis. Anyway, so if you feel so inclined, you can take a tally on how many times I mention being a Leo throughout the journey of wherever this charade takes me. But I was thinking, do you know how many true crime podcasts there are? Enough for it to be an entire genre. I don't think overanalyzing every SpongeBob episode in chronological order will ever be an entire genre. Because who has enough patience and mental illness to participate in such a gigorama of buffoonery and straight up tomfoolery? Me. I do. I think I can offer a perspective. Will it be unique? Will it be articulate? Will it be intelligent? Will it be funny? I really can't guarantee anything, but it will be a perspective. Someone, somewhere, once said, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has them. In my asshole, specifically, is one of a queer, non-binary, 20-year-old college student with bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, avoidant attachment, copious religious trauma, and who knows what else. I am an unfortunate resident of the state of Florida. I have an above average IQ, below average vision, and really short arms. I can't promise that this podcast won't be a mess. For now, I'm really going to try to film these things in one take, and if I fumble over my words, I will fumble and tumble into oblivion like my mental health did starting from the age of 8 years old. But I'm doing great now, actually. So I do want to have some semblance of structure for this podcast to not make it completely unbearable to listen to, because it could totally do that if I didn't have any structure. I would just go and go and go about nothing. So we don't really want that, unless someone does, I don't know. First, the episodes will probably start with me talking about nothing for a few minutes. It's hard for me to avoid that. It's just kind of how it goes. From there, I'll give a summary of each episode and general observations. I'll introduce the topics that I find correlate with the episode, offer my unbridled opinions from this here pretentious asshole, relate the themes to current news stories, and present the state of general and the present state of general socioeconomic political stratosphere, share my stories from my silly little life, blah blah blah. So I probably should be holding this to my mouth, maybe. I don't know. If the sound quality just utterly changed, there's gonna be a learning curve. So if anyone out there is listening. All right, I have water and kombucha here, so I don't know. I'm gonna need some little quenching breaks. So I'm gonna take a sip of this kombucha. Also, I have zero idea how long this is going to be. All right. Season 1, Episode 1, Part A, Help Wanted. Let's just get into the summary. SpongeBob wakes up, gets dressed, goes to his little weightlifting area where he has stuffed animals attached to a barbell. Iconic. There's a background behind him that says, I love pain. Controversial. I do like pain sometimes. Like when I accidentally, I mean, maybe it was intentionally, I don't really know. I burned myself flipping over a veggie burger in a skillet with my bare hands. It's like a little zap, you're alive. And I'm reminded I'm alive because I forget all the time. So sometimes I don't use actual cooking equipment and I just use my hands when something's burning because I guess I just really don't care about my well-being. And if I haven't done dishes in a while, that's definitely... Anyway, doesn't matter, let's keep going. SpongeBob leaves his humble abode and braces the town, singing, I'm ready. That, you know the vibes. SpongeBob goes to Krusty Krab, then turns around because he gets anxiety. Meanwhile, Squidward is wiping off his graffiti off his. There was a graffiti of Squidward, and it said "loser," and it was a little scribble scrabble of Squidward's face. Yeah, he was wiping it off. He was doing that. Patrick shows up and encourages SpongeBob to fucking go in and try to get the job. And so he goes in, super enthusiastic. He's kind of jumping off the walls. He trips. He's jumping off the walls. It's this whole little gag. And Mr. Krabs says, "Oh, what's good?" And SpongeBob was like, "I'm SpongeBob." And then Squidward nudged in and was like, "Hey, girl," and pulled Mr. Krabs aside. And Mr. Krabs like, "What's the tea?" And Squidward just said, "No." So I need a burp. Oh, it didn't really happen. Ah, there it is. Mr. Krabs sends SpongeBob to find this impossible spatula in hopes that he won't come back. But he does. The spatula exists, and he finds it, and he saves the day from an anchovy crisis. So that's our little summary. Topics I will discuss: imposter syndrome, the impossible balance of support and self-determination, and also employee shortages at fast food restaurants. Will people keep... What was I gonna say? Will any change actually happen? We're gonna do that. We're gonna talk about that, because that's been something that's been happening. Especially under the context of COVID-19. Now, I know imposter syndrome is not in the title, but the title rhymed, and I had to go with the rhyme. Anyway, let's talk about imposter syndrome. The definition of imposter syndrome, as defined by Merriam-Webster, is a psychological condition that is characterized by persistent self-doubt concerning one's abilities or accomplishment, accompanied by the fear of being exposed as a fraud despite evidence of one's ongoing success. In this episode, the most critical moment, in my opinion, which is right, is when SpongeBob turns around from the Krusty Krab and says, I can't do this, and the age-old, "I'm not good enough," which is a phrase I want to unpack a bit later. Luckily, Patrick was there to say, "Hey, little sponge bitch, turn the fuck around." I also don't know what the cursing protocol is, so I don't know. I'm just terrified of accidentally not labeling it as explicit. I don't know. We're going to cross that bridge when we get there. I'm just nervous, but I'm not going to not curse, so. And Patrick says to SpongeBob, "You're gonna get that job. Whose first words were, 'May I take your order?' Who made a spatula made of toothpicks and woodchuck? Who's a big yellow cube with holes? Who's ready?" And SpongeBob was like, "Me, girly, I'm ready." If it wasn't for Patrick's support, SpongeBob would have gone home. Granted, would Patrick be there to support and encourage him eventually? Yeah, of course. And it's his support and presence that sounds weird. I don't like that. That's what's important. No, that is what is important. Okay. But what if someone else got the job? SpongeBob didn't get the job because Patrick wasn't there. He showed up out of nowhere. I'm just gotta love Patrick. But you can fall down the endless pit of what ifs, but we're not doing that. I need another sip. It's so important to have a support system. I didn't really know what that meant for a long time, and I didn't have one. It was just me. And I didn't think I really deserved any kind of support or love. My mentality was, we're all in this alone. I'm a lone wolf. It was just that I didn't think anyone could know anything about me. That was a vibe. That was the vibe. Which Should I eradicate vibe from my vocabulary? Probably. Is it gonna happen? I don't know. I think it's already been 30 minutes. Is that insane? No way. All right, whatever. What was I gonna say? I'm almost kind of halfway through. Okay. I've always had really large, sometimes delusional goals, and that way I relate to SpongeBob. He just kind of thinks he can do anything. And despite what unbridled self-belief is present in your psyche, without that extra push from someone or some people who care about you, your goals simply will never get achieved purely because of negative thoughts or self-doubt. It's evident that SpongeBob is confident in his fry cook abilities, not in a pretentious way, but from a place of pure love of the sport. It also seems to be his destiny. I mean, if his first words were, "May I take your order?" I mean, come on. And the topic of destiny, I'm sure, is a whole other deal we'll get to sometime during the course of the series. But he practiced his whole life for his moment. I mean, we don't really know how old he is, but old enough to live in a pineapple house, which, I mean, work. But still, the self-doubt and anxiety kicked in the moment that counted the most. The confidence returned when he got inside, but he needed Patrick right then. It's Patrick's support that reinstated the confidence, and SpongeBob rose and exceeded the expedition exponentially, where Mr. Krabs and Squidward didn't believe in him, and they also didn't know what to do when the anchovies got there, and SpongeBob carried the team on his back, you know. And it seems like Squidward just doesn't care about SpongeBob's talent and just doesn't like him. But in Mr. Krabs's demeanor, when he was all like, "We're never gonna see him again," it just seems really condescending. This is where self-belief and independence needs to be balanced with an optimal support system. And that was a baby burp. It really seems like an impossible balance sometimes. So I took some imposter syndrome tests in which I was read to fucking filth with the results. I'll link the test somewhere. I don't know how this podcast thing works, but I guess I'll figure it out. So the first one was a psych.com test. And it said I had a high indication of imposter syndrome, and I'm going to speed read the results, and then I'm going to go back to the important parts. So hopefully I can just, we're going to see. You have signs of imposter syndrome, but don't panic. You may be struggling with some heavy feelings of worthlessness. You are also probably convinced yourself that you've fooled people into believing that you're competent and capable when you're really just faking it. You also see yourself as da-da-da-da-da-da. You have some work to do. Healing and confidence will come when you look at the origins of your feelings. A therapist can help. La la la. This will allow you to move on, have a better sense of self. DDD, blah blah blah. Bow, bow. And then the next one was from Test Yourself. I scored a 74. This one was a lot more in depth, a lot of questions, a lot more of a holistic approach. Definitely the most intensive of the imposter syndrome tests. So yeah, I mean, I scored high on that. And then the third one, IDR Labs, gave me a very strong indication of imposter syndrome. Okay, so I'm gonna go back and discuss. I was gonna do this part differently, but I'm not doing that now. So in the first test, I highlighted, you've also probably convinced yourself that you've fooled people into believing you're competent and capable when you're really just faking it. You also may see yourself as acting your whole way through life and waiting for the shoe to drop, and when people discover who you really are. So that's something that really, really resonated with me a lot. I have this thing where I'm constantly panicked about being a narcissist because I grew up with a really significant person in my life who was a narcissist, and I've subliminally sought out narcissistic people as friends. And you know, you don't realize until retrospect, and something I didn't really start to unpack until I turned 20. So I have this panic all the time, and my friends now hear me talk about this all the time, and they're just like,
when I initially recorded this, I said my name and you guys don't get to know my name. Yeah, my friends reassure me that I'm not a narcissist. I think it's because I talk all the time and I'm also kind of vain, but I do want to go into the fashion industry, and that's inherently vain, but I view fashion as, I'm going back now, bye.
And there's also, I hid a lot behind a lot of personas throughout my life, which was a self-protection mechanism. I didn't want people close to me, which is an avoidant attachment thing. And it also was just unsafe for me to be myself being a queer person. So there's that. Healing and confidence will come when you look at the origins of your feelings. Yeah. Remember, you've gotten where you are because, in the words of Stuart Smalley, you're good enough, smart enough, and doggone it, people like you. So, essentially, I am healthy, I'm wealthy, I'm rich, and I'm that bitch. Young baby Tate said it best. The next test I highlighted, it seemed that in spite of their top grades and achievements, they refused to take ownership of their success. I grew up in really competitive schools, and I remember whenever you take the, I think it's junior, or senior year, I don't know. When you take the ACTs and SATs, a lot of my peers were scoring 30s on those tests. 30, 32, 29, 30, I think the highest was 34. And I got a 26, which is still good. I'm not gonna complain. But I felt dumb, and I wasn't the kind of person who won things. Ever. I still don't win. I'm not a winner. Well, that sounds so, I mean, vague. In competitions and stuff, I was really bad at sports, and I wasn't the smartest in the class, so I didn't feel good at anything. And then I also highlighted unhealthy levels of perfectionism. I'm an artist, which I am proclaiming now. I used to, for the longest time, I didn't call myself an artist because I didn't feel like my art was good enough or worthy. But you are what you do. I do art. I'm an artist. Anyone who does art is an artist. So it's pretty simple. And then I also highlighted self-doubt and self-degradation. I don't know how to say that. That's something that really, the self-deprecating humor has been kicking me in the ass. Maybe, you know, people will probably get this. It's another thing that I really hid behind because it's easy to joke about yourself and pummel yourself into oblivion and joke about it than other people doing that to you, because it protects you. If you're confident and people, you know, they get intimidated by you, which isn't inherently bad, or they want to work harder to bring you down, but if you're putting yourself down, it's like, okay, you've done half. Okay, so it cut off because apparently on GarageBand, you can only have 640 bars, so I'm gonna have to figure out what else to do. I'm almost halfway through my notes, so hopefully it won't end up being that long. I don't know how it's been like 30 minutes, so I think this thing will be an hour. I was talking about self-deprecating humor. Yeah, you've already done half of the work of the pain that kind of could be caused. And if you become so desensitized to putting yourself down, you just kind of don't feel anything. But what I've been trying to just really think through, and there was a time recently that the approach I took to this was, I'm gonna reclaim the words annoying and stupid, because I am annoying from, you know, a definition of, yeah, I can push people's buttons and I'm loud and I can joke around and I'm a Leo rat. There's another tally for ya. Annoying and, yeah, stupid. I don't know how to take care of myself. I can't park. I don't really know how to do laundry. Don't know how. I don't know how to do a lot of it. I mean, that's a whole other podcast episode, things I can't do. It's actually kind of a short list. It's basically parking and laundry. No, there's more. I'm kidding. I'm not perfect. So I guess that's that. I also had highlighted group and family support might be in order. That was from the third test result. And I also said psychotherapy, in quote, in parentheses, as medication is not used to treat imposter. Oh, I originally thought it said medication is used. I was like, huh? Yeah, psychotherapy for sure. And group and family support. Support is so important. And when I didn't have people to talk to this about, I put so much pressure on myself, and I still do. Pressure to succeed, or else you're worthless, piece of shit. So, beep. It's important to schedule an appointment with your doctor, mental health professional, blah, blah, blah. So, whatever. Final thought. Find you a Patrick. People who believe in you, gas you up. People will always see in you things you can't see in yourself. I'd love to see me from your point of view. Ariana Grande said it best. Despite how much you believe in yourself or objectively know about your skills and abilities and talents, you won't ever be able to see them the way someone else does. Which, of course, there are also people who will shit on you, but we're not talking about that. I mean, there will always be Squidwards in the world, too, who completely negate any talent SpongeBob had just because he didn't like him. Squidward simply said no, which, I'm also going to approach these episodes from what we know at the time. This is the beginning of the show. I'm trying not to, like, take anything from later on in the show. I haven't watched SpongeBob in a while, but it's ingrained in me. So, okay, part two.
So, I've made the executive decision to refilm the second part of this podcast 5 days later. It is now, and it's 12:34 a.m. I woke up approximately 30 minutes ago, post falling asleep at 7 p.m. And now I'm eating noodles, which I will inform you that I'm a hypocrite because I honestly am less triggered about this now, which that sense of the word trigger is very, very loose, but I used to get really upset at chewing sounds, that it would actually make me really anxious and it would hurt my head. Which is ridiculous and unnecessary, but I've grown, I've learned, I've become a better person. Needless to say, I was having imposter syndrome, but about the second part of this podcast talking about employee food shortages, I just didn't go as deep as I wanted to, and that was upsetting to me. Even though I have no idea if anyone's even going to listen to this, for my own peace of mind, I wanted to... Oh, the noodles are a bit spicy and I'm a bit of a pussy. Vegan noodles from this brand. For a while I didn't. Didn't realize that noodles had, like, beef fat in them, and that, you know, hurt my feelings, but I think with veganism and vegetarianism, if you truly don't know that something's not vegan or vegetarian, who cares? You know, who's gonna clock you for that? Shut the fuck up. Also, so much has happened in the past 5 days that if my vibe seems different, here are the things that have happened. Lord has released Reese's Pieces. Lord has released a new song. Frenemies has ended. And I cut a significant family member out of my life via 5-page email. Because they've been attacking everything about me and have called me a Satanist.
a lot, which I'm not. I don't have anything against Satanists, but anyway, so that has happened, and I'm definitely plunging myself into workaholic mode because I don't want to keep thinking about it. And how it's affecting the people I know who are close to this person is mainly what's kind of killing me over it. Because this person needs to kind of sit and think about how they've hurt me my whole life. So, but it's so sucks. Anyway, so the second part, I've probably already been talking for a few minutes. I can't tell. Employee shortages in fast food restaurants. I remember hearing a lot about this a few weeks ago. I'm hearing less about it now, which is sad, but also unsurprising because, you know, how the fuck... It's hard to fight such an oppressive system consistently. And it's one of those things we hear about and then it goes away and it shouldn't go away. Similarly with, you know, the energy towards the homophobic bills being passed in Florida and the transphobic bills. That energy's gonna die. And I go to FSU. I am coming out as an FSU student because being in Tallahassee during all of this, which, you know, if for some reason someone's listening to this in the future, a bill was passed. Okay, I'm gonna like finish using those. I'm sorry. They'll be done soon. So if you're someone who gets really upset about chewing sounds, I get it. So just bear with me as I eat my last bite. And one more bite. And I'm also gonna get up to get my water jug. And now my nose is running because of the spiciness. Anyway. Homophobic and transphobic bills are passing in the state of Florida. And that's also something that's been really fucking affecting me the past week and change, or 2 weeks, because I just feel like absolute ass about my existence for being queer and trans. So that's super fun. I keep, it's one of those things I keep trying to convince myself that I'm not queer and trans, or I just disassociate from my identities and pretend I'm not. Pretend I just don't exist at all. I don't know if I'm taking too much space in the world as a queer trans person trying to navigate a society that's inherently against me. Especially with the situation with one of my family members. I've sort of been disassociating from my identity. Anyway, needless to say, the energy in Tallahassee against these bills is not where I hoped it was. Which maybe I'm just not involved in the political action communities here. enough, or I just don't know exactly what's going on with them, but I'm like, where are the protests? We're in the Capitol. I mean, I guess you could say, well, why aren't you organizing a protest? And then you're probably right, but I think just us queer people have run out of energy, potentially, and I can't speak on behalf of the community at all, because I'm not the community, I'm only one person. But needless to say, I think, obviously, different situation completely, but when you're in a system that oppresses you inherently, and you try to make a change, but the change doesn't really happen, then you kind of shut up and take it sometimes, and it shouldn't have to be that way, especially, but in these fast food jobs, they're making money, and a lot of people's livelihoods depend on having a fast food job. So, you know, even if they boycott, even if they quit, there's a lot of instability and fear rooted in that a lot of the times it's not necessarily easier to stay in that job, in that oppressive, suffocating environment. But if it's necessary for survival, it's necessary for fucking survival. And it sucks. So, anyway, I know that was a tangent that wasn't entirely involved in what I want to talk about, but let's get into it. I want to talk about the relationship between SpongeBob, Mr. Krabs, and Squidward, and the whole anchovy situation. So, I think comparing Squidward and SpongeBob's relationship with their work at the Krusty Krab, obviously it's just begun for SpongeBob, but how they approach their work is really interesting. It's clear that Squidward is either apathetic or purely doesn't like his job, and I'm trying to approach the series with what we know at each episode. I haven't watched SpongeBob in forever, but I do kind of know what happens to some of the characters later on, so I'm trying not to think that way. But us seeing Squidward's name graffitied with the word loser, that's not fun. Unless you have a kink for being degraded by your community, i.e. Azalea Banks, then, you know, people talking down on you or collective disapproval of your existence is not necessarily a fun thing to go through. So a lot of people don't, and it's hard for us to know if his job is necessary for his survival, but when something's necessary for your survival, you kind of stick around despite hating it potentially. Okay, where am I at? My notes. I kind of went off. So SpongeBob kind of has this delusional optimism and blissful unawareness to a cruel world that I think is something interesting to observe and will continue to be interesting to observe throughout the series. He's clearly being oppressed by, which maybe I'm using that word too loosely, but a critical moment in the show is one of the last shots where Mr. Krabs says, "Now time to count my money." Now let's think about the fact that SpongeBob single-handedly saved the day in the anchovy situation, where the whole entire restaurant was packed and these anchovies were running around, and the boat checkout section was floating on top of this crowd, and Mr. Krabs and Squidward were crowd surfing, not knowing what to do, and SpongeBob comes in and just magically, amazingly pumps out all these Krabby Patties, and they make a lot of money, and there's just, and Mr. Krabs says, "Oh, this is my money now, this is all my money."
but it shouldn't be that way. And I think that's really representative about how corporate capitalism and that hierarchy inherently is there to invalidate and to degrade wage workers because they can, and because of whatever complex that they understand that they're superior. But when you're blindsided towards people's suffering, then you kind of just end up not caring about people's lives when you're so far removed from that. And it's fucked up, and it shouldn't be that way. And it's upsetting and disgusting and disturbing. So I want to eat some melatonin gummies so I can hopefully fall asleep, which my sleep schedule is so bad. And I think I want to bring up to my therapist and psychiatrist getting prescribed a sleep medicine, because I think it's getting to a point where it's really affecting my life negatively. Which a lot of it does have to do with schedule and routine. But even when I had a devoted schedule and routine, still, a lot of times I just wasn't in control of not being able to sleep throughout the night. Anyway, nothing to do with anything. The reason why I'm refilming this is because of the fact I continued to get off topic to the point where I lost a lot of the meaningful things I wanted to say. So when I thought about the title of Help Wanted, I thought back to this documentary I watched about Foxconn workers, which is the company that makes iPhones. And I watched this documentary in my international business class, and it mentioned how, which my memory is shit, it mentioned how the assembly lines were one of the highest paying jobs in that, in, you know, wage working jobs, the lower, blah, 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 entry level jobs, that's what I'm trying to say. And I remember seeing this shot of all these people lined up and trying to get this job. And they have these iPhone factories that they call iPhone cities because they're so fucking gigantic. And, you know, they did have to install nets because people were killing themselves. Trigger warning, I should have said that before. And that's disturbing. And, you know, they're separated from their families, and some of the jobs have better conditions than others, but a lot of the times it's people working 10 to 12 hours on an assembly line doing the same shit over and over again, which just sounds like, it sounds like absolute hell, you know? Oh God, I think one of the keys on my laptop is broken, and this is a new laptop. But it's definitely my fault, because everything is my fault. Well, I did accidentally step on my laptop. So, because I fucking can't take care of myself. Anyway, I'm getting off topic again. So, one worker, and I think this is interesting, and he had one of the better jobs. And this is from a Business Insider article. He had one of the better jobs. Oh, that key's gonna be an issue when I'm trying to make things in Illustrator. That's kind of ass, but we're gonna forget about it. One of the workers said, if you wanna do it, do it. If you don't, leave. That's freedom. There are other jobs around. But if you're, a lot of people's livelihoods depended on this job to provide for their families. And I think that's an instance of cognitive dissonance where someone is convinced by what the corporate machine has fed them, despite the machine still affecting their lives negatively. And I even personally, I've never worked a fast food job, and I'm thankful that I haven't had to necessarily. I've worked in retail and customer service, but I know people who do work these jobs, and it's really insufferable and stressful sometimes. And I remember trying to get Checkers one time, and both the locations were closed, and this was a few weeks ago, and I was upset about it. But then I realized the next day, I saw this shit about people boycotting their jobs and how little they get paid and how awful the conditions are. And I was like, shit, I have no right to complain. I went to fucking CVS and got mozzarella sticks. It was fine. And these people are suffering in their jobs just to get me my food. I was like, holy shit. But at the same time, what's the alternative, you know? If these people can't get better conditions, but they also can't get a better job, we all are just not going to collectively stop going to fast food restaurants, because even if we try to stage some kind of boycott, most likely people won't give a shit. So it's just, you know, upsetting. So the pandemic has kind of been the final straw for a lot of fast food workers. In this Washington Post article, they interview this man named Jim Conway, who has been working at restaurants since 1982, where he made $2.13 an hour plus tips. And recently at Olive Garden, he makes $2.83 an hour plus tips, which, if you adjust for inflation, this is absolutely just disturbing and not okay. And since March, there have been 1.7 million fewer jobs filled in the restaurant industry than before the pandemic, despite there being 1 million new job openings opening up in March. And this has become a political issue, you know, as things do. And Republicans blame Biden raising the unemployment insurance supplement, which is just an absolute prime example of cognitive dissonance. Just go find another job, you know? Continue to be a slave to the corporate machine and make me food while I live a comfortable life. That sort of mentality. And although I absolutely don't prescribe to that, I still contribute to fast food restaurants because it's convenient and cheap. And that's why they still exist and why they will continue to exist. And it is one of those jobs because it has such a high turnover rate that there's usually always listings. And in this article's interviews, the workers described kind of a collective awakening to a lot of their concerns and how mistreated they've been. And there were long-term preemptive health conditions that were essentially exponentially intensified because of the pandemic. I mean, God bless the fucking essential workers, because I can't imagine how terrifying that is every single day, and the mental health strain that has put fast food workers under, seeing all these people coming through, you know, the people not wearing masks, and just watching these rich fuckers getting their fast food when they could be keeping you safer by not doing so. So, God, are all these keys broken? I'm so upset at myself. Anyway, yeah, so McDonald's has raised their wages for their company-owned stores, which is only 5% of their stores, and entry-level workers can earn $11 to $17 an hour, but it's only for 5% of their stores.
So how much does the boycotting and people quitting change shit? Not that much. Not that much. And it sucks. And a Jersey Mike's store in Santa Cruz is willing to pay a $10,000 incentive for a new assistant manager. And they're offering a $5,000 bonus for new shift leaders and $500 for part-time and full-time employees. I did, in fact, reach the max level of a song again. I probably should record these somewhere else other than GarageBand, but this is where we're at right now, and I think I could manipulate the sound quality enough to make it better. I think it's also funny how, you know, the Biden's minimum wage of $15 an hour isn't happening till 2022, and even then, it's... How is the economy going to adjust negatively to that? In meaning, is everything just going to become more expensive and we're going to run into the same problems? And $15 an hour is still not entirely livable. There's this other article that was really just fucking annoying that was talking about the myth of labor shortages, it's called. And it's basically, well, if corporations can raise their wages, this isn't that much of a problem when it is. Because it's so much bigger than just wage. It runs so much deeper than that. It's these people are suffering every single day so you can get a burger. And I contribute to that too, like I've said. So I'm not innocent. It's just another example of corporations profiting off of people suffering. And even if fast food restaurants were eradicated in replacement, there's just, you know, home run, family run shit. First off, it's gonna be more expensive, especially if they're paying their workers well, and that's gonna make a lot of food inaccessible to people and a lot of jobs inaccessible to people. Because if the working conditions are better at a home-run restaurant, then the turnover rate will be lower and there'll be less job openings and people will have so much less access to entry-level jobs, which are necessary for people's survival. And also, being a manager at a chain or a franchise, you have a clear run plan on how you need to run your business, where that's something that's not prevalent in a home run business. So it's going to be easier for a manager or an owner to maintain the success of a franchise, also because of the reputation around specific fast food restaurants and just the fact that they're successful. So, I mean, you know that people are always going to get McDonald's or people are always going to get Taco Bell, and that there's a demand for that. So if the demand is consistent and the restaurant is performing well, that's going to continue, and that will provide job security for managers as long as they're working there and doing a good job. So, yeah, and it also mentions how corporate profits have been rising rising the past few decades and now make up a larger share of the GDP than previous decades. As a result, most companies can afford to respond to growing economy by raising wages and continuing to make profits, albeit perhaps not the unusually generous profits. So who gives a fuck that the profits are unusually generous, or less unusually generous as they used to be? They're still profiting greatly off of people suffering, and that's not going to change anytime soon, and there doesn't seem to be an adequate solution for it. Which, you know, leaves the podcast on an upsetting note. God, I really fucked up this key. It's so upsetting. There's worse things that have happened. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Okay.
I don't have an eloquent segue. There's a lot we talked about. You see, even watch me complain about my fucking laptop. Like, come on. I'm talking about something really important, and I'm sitting here like, oh, a key on my laptop's broken. Who cares? It's not going to affect my life that much. Anyway, I don't have an eloquent segue. There's a lot we talked about. And the truth is, just boils down to nothing we don't already know. Corporations would do the bare minimum to keep people around and maximize profits while people are still suffering deeply. Raising wages or offering monetary incentives is more of a band-aid than anything else. Working conditions are still going to be shit. So what can we do? I don't know. And yeah, I think there's a small reflection of dissonance between Mr. Krabs and SpongeBob, where SpongeBob isn't aware that Mr. Krabs is just fully profiting off of his hard work. And I think it's interesting how he loves being a fry cook so much, when that's just not something that really happens in real life. So anyway, I'm tired, my melatonin is kicking in, so I'm just gonna leave this where it is now. And I hope that whoever listens to this is having an incredible day, and that I know this first episode is rough and choppy, and I'm gonna just not care about there being cuts that are really abrupt in it. And I know that every single episode is going to improve. I started making my notes for the next episode. We're gonna talk about Elon Musk and Squidward and how I think they would be friends. And we're going to talk about pride and deep-rooted insecurity that comes with really prideful people sometimes, and masking your pitfalls with what you perceive to be as your own genius. And we're gonna kind of cover those things. That's gonna be the most important thing I talk about. And then was there supposed to be a love arc between SpongeBob and Sandy, and shit like that. So anyway, have a good day. I know my vibe in this portion of the podcast is just like so different than before, and it's going to continue to be different. And will I blame it on bipolar? Sure. But I've definitely been in a depressive episode for a few days, and I don't want sympathy. Don't pity me. I've been dealing with this for a long time. And, you know, working myself into oblivion is something that helps me survive. So anyway, have a good day and good night.